Okay, so today we have the irony that it's the first day of the 9 days, but we're jumping in the pool. We'll talk about the issues of tefillah, about the obligation of immersion in the mikveh, which is a crucial part of the geirus, or the crucial part of the geirus that remains to be determined. But one way or another, that is what's necessary for every ger, male or female, adult or child. And we'll try to get down some of the basics and some of the concepts between today and tomorrow, hopefully to have a little bit of a familiarity with what exactly is involved here. And one thing we'll see is that there are a lot of lechachilas, maybe only, maybe not, but the b'dievet, that's something where the major differences are, but that's also something that'll come out through the details. We'll see that there are a number of dinim that are recorded in Shulchan Aruch, and they come out from the Gemaras also, where there's some room to debate whether they are crucial b'dievet, but they're at least necessarily on a lechachila level. So, first of all, where does it come from? In the context of the historical geirus, so we know the Gemara tells us that the elements of geirus we have are derived from the historical geirus of Klal Yisrael. So where exactly does that come from? So here, it's interesting, there is a little bit of a range of possibilities from the Gemara. It's not 100% clear. Doesn't seem to be explicit 100% in the Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Mem Vav. The Rambam refers to the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro, in Parak Yutes, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Leich el Ha'am, V'kidashtem Hayom u'machar, V'chibsu simlosam. You should launder your clothes. And the Gemara has the statement that if they're washing their clothes, so we have to assume for sure they are immersing themselves. But as the Bach and others point out, that it's a little surprising that the Rambam quotes this as the source, because the Gemara doesn't actually conclude that way. The Gemara has a possible refutation. Maybe that was just to be clean and neat. Maybe it's more from the fact that there's a Hazah. That should show that there was a Tefillah. So the Bach has a whole discussion to put it on the list if you had a chance to see, as far as how exactly we see that that was the source. We've mentioned in the past also that there's a pasuk in Parshas Vayishlach, which some of the Rishonim point to, that conveys the idea that to purify from Avodah Zarah requires tefillah in the mikveh, and that could be relevant here as well. Some of the Rishonim do quote that, although presumably what we would see from there is just the role that tefillah plays, but we would need more of a source like the ones the Gemara are proposing. Gemara is proposing in order to show that tefillah specifically is part of the historical geirus, because our whole notion of deriving contemporary geirus from historical geirus, so we need to be told what are the elements. So we need a source not only that in concept tefillah is effective in addressing past idolatry, but also that it's part of the history of geirus. So that's where these psukim are better candidates. And here the Rambam invokes this pasuk, despite the fact that from the Gemara, it seems like it's not 100% clear that that's the conclusion. And the Gemara tells us other dinim that is important to appreciate, that the rules for the tefillah are parallel to that of other tefillos that we have, such as the tefillah of a nido, or tefillah for the purposes of taros. So at least for the purpose of the kashrus of the mikveh has to be the same kind of a mikveh that a nido would use and have all of those relevant rules. And also that there has to be no chatzitos, that the process that a nido goes through in order to make sure that when she immerses there isn't anything causing an interruption. So that is relevant here also. We also have to make sure that there isn't a chatzitza present that would interfere. Also, as part of the process, as the Gemara makes clear, that just before the immersion, so we tell the ger in process, once again, about the mitzvot, And as we noted during our first week, this seems to be maybe the third time that there is a message being conveyed that there are mitzvot that are being accepted. And there's what to discuss about why exactly it's happening here. Rashi commenting over there, Rashi essentially understands that through this step, through the immersion in the mikveh, he's being mekabel the conversion itself. He's being nichnas libris. He's entering into the covenant. So it makes sense that he should be aware of what's happening. He should appreciate that that's the activity here, that you are taking on Judaism. The Levush has a slightly different focus. He says, Lizarzo b'shas maisa, that at this time he needs to be encouraged. He needs to be enthusiastic about what's happening, so we make sure that he's clear right now that that's what's happening. Now, that would also seem to address the question of Kavana. Now, it would seem quite intuitive for every reason that one would need Kavana for Geirus and for accepting Yadus when one proceeds with this Tevila. And that certainly, L'Charchila, is the assumption. There is a lot written about this because there is some room to wonder and to wonder if there is a tefillah that happens without this intent, could it possibly be kosher? So a part of this revolves around the Gemara Memhei and the Beis, which kind of starts off this whole section of Geirus Gemaras over there in Yevamos, where the Gemara talks about the Eved of Rivchia, who was Tovel, this woman, for the purposes of relations. It was a non-Jewish woman. And the Gemara quotes Rav Asi as saying that I could recognize her as a Jew because of this. So why? Where is there a element that allows her to be recognized as Jewish? So the Gemara says, well, Milo Tovla Lenidusa. So she's going to go to the mikveh for nida purposes. And therefore, that helps. So how does it help? So Rashi has, and we touched upon this briefly yesterday because it was relevant also to the Mila question, Rashi has two ways of understanding it. Either that even if there wasn't a tefillah for Geirus, but there will be a tefillah for nidus, and therefore that also could work. And that would seem to indicate that you could have tevilah without kavana, and that's also going to be effective. Others understand differently, and the Rashi, there's two possibilities here. But if you look at the Rambam also, that the other possible understanding is that, no, you have to have tevilah l'shem geirus. But the concern was that there, maybe it wasn't a sincere tefillah. That's part of our first week discussion also. And what if somebody is converting for the sake of a relationship, for the sake of marriage or the like? So we don't know if it's really an authentic acceptance of Judaism. So we have to look and see, is there a observance of halacha too? So if we see that, yes, she follows all the halachic requirements, and she is tovel in mikveh for taras and mishpacha, so then that shows that she was a sincere convert. So milo tovel nidusa doesn't mean that the tefillah for nida could work to effect the geirus. It would mean that that would show that she is sincere, and therefore the other tefillah, which would have to be for the sake of geirus, that could indeed be effective. So that's why, based on that Gemara, there is some room for question about that. And yesterday we related that question possibly also to Mila. Now, what if you had a Mila that was done for the mitzvah of Mila that would have been performed on any Jewish baby boy, and we're realizing it needs to count for Geirus also. So too can tefillah that happens as a mitzvah, not necessarily for the purposes of Geirus, could it also count for Geirus? So it seems like it's a machlokas in the Rishonim, depending on how you interpret that Gemara. And it sounds like from the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch that b'diavad it could work, which gets into other complications that we'll talk about in a minute, because as Tosfos points out, a tefillah for Nida is going to be lacking in a lot of the requirements that we normally associate with Geiris. So first of all, it's not going to have a Beis Din, and that's something we'll probably get into a little bit more tomorrow and then from an additional angle next week. So we know we require a Beis Din for Geiris. L'chachila, we're assuming that the Beis Din is there for the tefillah also. So if the tefillah of the Nida could count, so it's pretty unlikely that there's a Beis Din present for that. And if you see Tosfos gets into this in a kind of roundabout way, brings in all kinds of other issues, because the whole question of women rabbis and women dayanim gets brought up by this Tosfos. A whole discussion in other places in Shas about women for dayanis, the Tosfos and Sanhedrin, but Tosfos discusses it here also, because it's trying to figure out how could it be that the tefillah of a nida could possibly, even theoretically, count for gerus if it needs to be in front of a Beis Din. So the women normally bring a Beis Din with them when they go to Bitovel for nida, so they don't normally have men there, so they have women dayanim, Tosfos goes through the whole thing. So how exactly is this happening? Is it that there are female judges who are present? So presumably not, because that's a problem. Dvorah gets into the whole story. So ultimately, Tosfos there considers that maybe the Beis Din doesn't really have to be there for the tefillah, only has to be there for the Kabbalah HaMitzvot. So that's something we'll have to address, but that's one of the major technical issues. Another one we'll get to in a minute. It's going to come up from another point. Tyler.
Yeah, we might get to this very soon, but Kabbalah HaMitzvot, are we saying it's three phases of questions, or something a little different?
Yeah, it is something different that we will get to. That is something that builds on all that, but is yet different. Okay. So that question has all kinds of technical challenges, the idea that the tefillah of Nida could work for Geiris, and it's not really so relevant practically, except for what it reflects on this question. Is it actually possible that a tefillah for some other purpose could count? And it brings with it a whole host of ramifications, how much is actually necessary as far as the tefillah being in the presence of Edom, in the presence of the Beis Din, and following all the other requirements that we have here. So for the Rambam, who's reading the Gemara differently, the Rambam reads the Gemara as we follow up to see how observant she is. So it would seem like you need to have the tefillah l'shem geiris with all of the rules of geiris and the like. And in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, we see there is a machlokus about whether this is actually ma'akev or not. And this also brings us into the next question, that the idea that tefillah has to be during the daytime. So that, the Gemara also mentions explicitly, that tefillah of a ger should be during the daytime. Here again, it's a little unclear how ma'akev it is, how crucial. The Gemara certainly says that is a din, and Tosfos brings that into the question also, because the tefillah of a nida happens at night. So once again, that's also a challenge. If the nida tefillah is counting, so how could it be at night? So Tosfos, one of the Tosfos in the previous Tosfos mentioned, Tosfos says, well, maybe that's just the din l'chachila midrabanan. That l'chachila, we have to do it during the daytime, but it's not ma'akev, it's a din midrabanan. And we could, after the fact, end up relying on a tefillah nida that happened at night. Other Rishonim have a different perspective on it. It also seems like, from the Gemara and from Tosfos on the next daf, that the issue is the assumption that we have a din process here, that Geirus itself is seen as mishpat, is seen as din, and therefore the question is, how much of that has to follow the rules of Beis Din? So normally, a Beis Din is only supposed to meet during the daytime. Although, we distinguish between Tchilas Din and Gemar Din. So we require a Tchilas Din to happen during the daytime. So that, Tosfos also addresses the question, how much is that applicable to the Tevilah? So is that Tchilas Din? So the Tosfos, the second Tosfos says that it is, even though it's not the whole process beginning, because we had the Mila beforehand, which then draws on the questions again of how the Mila fits into the process. A prerequisite or a part of the process itself. But that's what that second Tosfos says, that even though we had the Mila, nonetheless, the mikveh is considered tchilas din, and therefore, at least l'chachila, it should be during the daytime. Okay, so that's, again, one of these dinim that is there, certainly l'chachila, and it's a machlokas after the fact, if it is ma'akev. What is also in a similar category is the question of tevila on Shabbos. So here, as with many of these cases, it's brought up in the Gemara. It's a little unclear what the conclusion is. The Gemara talks about not being tovel on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Yossi. And what emerges from the discussion is that it should be connected to the question of whether you need tefila for gerus, right? Because like we saw, there is a machlokas in the Gemara if one or the other, mila or tefila, could be effective after the fact. And we paskin that we need both. And we certainly paskin at least that we need tefila, as we discussed yesterday. Tefila is the more indispensable of the two. So since you need tefila for gerus, so then what it sounds like from the Gemara as a consequence of that, since tefila is crucial, so therefore you can't do the tefila on Shabbos.
Which Gemara is it again?
There's a Gemara in Yevamos over there in Daf and Vav Amud Beis. And I apologize for not putting that specifically on the Makoros. It gets hard to keep track of which of these, the whole stretch from Memhei Amud Beis to Mem Zayin, it gets a little hard to keep track of which Gemaras have been seen, which Gemaras haven't been seen. So if I didn't put that specifically, I apologize. Moshe.
Just a question on the woman mikvah. We do let women go sometimes during the day.
Correct. Right. So that's theoretically possible. But Tosa, and that could answer the question also. But so Tosa is working off the assumption that under normal circumstances happening at night, and it seems to be hard to understand how could it be also a gerus tefila if the gerus tefila is during the daytime. So that could also be an approach. Maybe whatever random case we're talking about happens to be she, but it's hard to, if you're there, we say Milo Tavli Nidusa, it's the reference is kind of like a more default kind of, how she generally, when assumed that yeah, she's generally going to the mikveh for Nida, so we can rely on that. So if night was Ma'akev, so it's not going to work to say, well, maybe it was that she was going during the daytime in an unusual circumstance. But anyway, so that's Gemara about Shabbos. So it connects the issue to the fact that the tefillah is necessary for the gerus to happen. And if that's the case, so then it would have to be that it should not fit with Shabbos, because it is a tikkun. You're essentially fixing him. And therefore, that's inappropriate for Shabbos. They say inappropriate because presumably it's not an actual malacha. We're not talking about the makkah bepatish in the literal sense. I don't think it's assumed that we're talking here about a malacha d'oraisa. And then on the level midrabanan, that it's an act of tikkun. So therefore, it's inappropriate for Shabbos for that reason. The way it sounds like from the Rambam and also from the Nosei Kelim and the Shulchan Aruch that the issue is connected to its role in Din. That we also have an Issur d'Rabbanan for Bate Din to function on Shabbos. So if we're assuming that Din is what's happening here, so then that itself would be a reason not to have it on Shabbos. So that could be the points are related. You know, it could be that since we're dealing with the Rabbanan kind of consideration, that maybe the presence of the Bezdin makes it more of a problem. So the way the Rambam formulates it, for example, this is in Parak Yigimel Halacha Vav of the Suri Bia. So the Rambam says, since we require Bezdin, so we can't do this on Shabbos. So does that mean to say that it is a Maisa Din, and therefore a Maisa Din shouldn't happen on Shabbos? That's the way the Or Sameach understands it. The Or Sameach says that in Hilchos Yontif, in Dalet Zayin, that it's an Isser of Din on Shabbos, which isn't the impression one would have gotten from our Gemara. So it could be what the Rambam means is that if it weren't for the need for a Bez Din, so then you could have the Tefillah on Shabbos, and it wouldn't be perceived as an act of tikkun, because it could look like somebody just wants to take a dip. Somebody is just cooling off. Wouldn't necessarily be perceived as a tikkun in the sense of what's happening. But since the Beis Din is going to be there, so that will make it clear that this is a formal process and that this is actually a tikkun. And for that reason, that's the issue. So that becomes a little bit of a back and forth. If we're going to focus on the question of whether it is a tikkun or not, so then we have to also understand, when is this tikkun happening? That when the Judaism essentially takes effect is going to be relevant to pinpoint. There is a very interesting tshuva about this in the Chuvas Minchas Asher, in Rav Asher Weiss's Chuvas, in Chelek Aleph, where he addressed Rav Avram Genachovsky, and it's relevant to the content of the Chuvas. Rav Avram Genachovsky, if you're familiar with his writings, is related to Rabbi Genach, that's where the name comes from. And Rav Avram Genachovsky is a tremendous Lamdan. He has many writings that are very, very Lamdish and very Populish. So it affects the discourse here, if you read the tshuva. See, they're trying to figure out exactly what the nature of the issue is. So one of the questions he's trying to figure out is, who is this Isser on? Right? Is this Isser on the Beis Din? Is this Isser on the Ger? Right? The Ger is not Jewish. So does he have this Isser Darabana not to be Tovel himself on Shabbos? Is the Isser on him? Is the Isser on Beis Din? Is an Isser of Amir al-Akum. So, in the course of this tshuva, Vashra has a very alumnus tshuva about this, he also gets into the subject that we discussed yesterday, and it's not the last time it's going to come up in Hilchos Geiris, so it's good to keep this fresh. So yesterday we talked about the question of whether a Ger can perform his own Mila. And even though the Mila has to be done by a Jew, so what if the Ger tries to, or the Ger performs it himself, so will that be valid? So but he's not Jewish. So we saw the Menachet Chinuch and others raise the issue that if he had already had the tefillah out of order, and he becomes Jewish with the Mila, then maybe, like we find in other places in Halacha, we might say that his Judaism and his Mila come at the same time. They come simultaneously, and therefore it's a Jewish person being mom, just like a woman can receive her get, and she's independently single to receive it at the same moment that she becomes single because of the get. So as we saw yesterday, there's a whole machlokes, when that applies, when it doesn't apply, and the Chinuch was applying this, and the Tshuva Shlema was explaining why not to apply it. So it comes up here also. So maybe we should say, okay, he's becoming Jewish through this tefillah, and because of that, he's subject to this Isser D'Rabbanan. Or is it an Isser on the Beis Din? So he goes through all of that in this tshuva. It's a fascinating reading. It's in the Chelek Aleph of Minchas Asher. And the part of the discussion, so he also considers what exactly is the moment that it takes effect. When does he become Jewish? So this is the last step. So tefillah is what finishes it off. So when is it? Is it when he gets out of the mikveh? So the Kesef Mishnah sounds, talking in the context of Taras, that the mikveh takes its effect when the individual leaves the mikveh? Or is it when you're in the water itself? That's how the Rabbi Chavra sounds, Tzafnas Paneach, seems to understand that it's retroactively happening in the water itself. The Imri Yosher of Meir Arik, we mentioned him yesterday also in other contexts, is one has tshuvas about anesthesia and related issues. So Imri Yosher has a tshuva where he says that basically it's comparable to the process we find when it comes to Tumah V'Tahara, that sometimes you have to have Tevilah B'Mikvah and then Harav Shemesh, that you need to have the mikveh itself, but the Tahara is not complete until the next evening. Till that evening, in the beginning of the next day. So maybe here too, the ger, he becomes Jewish, coming out of the mikveh, that's the Harav Shemesh, and the tevilah itself is the beginning of that process. So all of that gets entered into this discussion as to what exactly is the moment of the conversion, because if we're concerned that there's a tikkun happening, so where is that tikkun taking place? What is it that we would have to worry about specifically when it comes to the process of Geiris and being concerned that that's an issue as far as Shabbos is concerned. That's the Chelkes Yalov that we talked about 2 days ago. So it's interesting that in his tshuva, if you recall, the Chelkes Yalov was the one who says that the mikveh is the whole thing, and therefore if you have a gersha tovel v'lomol, he's a shtickel Jewish, right, if you recall. So in that same tshuva, the Chelkes Yalov says that he doesn't understand why we shouldn't allow tefillah on Shabbos. He thinks maybe we should allow it if right now it's Shabbos and it's a question of waiting, because we could apply the logic of pikuach nefesh. That's the reason we machal Shabbos for pikuach nefesh. We say chalel alav Shabbos achas kedei sheyishmeru Shabbos v'tarve, that we want to allow this individual to observe many Shabboses in the future. So we have to be machal Shabbos now in order to allow that to take place. So that svara we find sometimes in poskim is applied to other things that are not straight for, it's not straight pikuach nefesh, but just have that logic to it. That if we could engender more Shmir Shabbos for this Chilul Shabbos, we should allow it. So he says, okay, so he's going to be able to be Shomer Shabbos by converting, so maybe that should be a reason to justify being Tovel Himan Shabbos for that purpose. Shlomo?
Yeah, just a quick question. We said that there's some sort of Isser Derabanan when he comes out of the mikvah, I believe. So I just, or something about an Isser Derabanan, I just missed that point. What was the Isser Derabanan we were referring to?
Well, the point is that the Isser that we're concerned about seems to be the Isser of Tikkun. That's what the Gemara mentions. And the question, probably not a Tikkun Darais, so I don't think it's actual Maka B'Patish. So it's a Derabanan version of Tikkun, of completing something. So if that's the issue, so then the question Rav Weiss was discussing is, when does that tikkun happen? So if the Geirus process isn't finished, so then it's not a question. The whole assumption seems to be that the process is completing his Judaism. And that's what the Gemara said, right? The Gemara also said that if we assume that the tefillah is necessary, so then it would carry with it a problem of tikkun on Shabbos. So following that logic, he's trying to pinpoint when exactly does it happen. What does it take to complete that process? Is it when he gets out of the mikveh? Is it sometime in the mikveh? All of that. So in any event, Chelkes Yalov raises this issue. Happens to be that the Mechas Asher refers to that tshuva also, and he says he doesn't get it because the Maisa, so he'll convert on Sunday and he'll observe all the Shabboses afterwards. So why would we have to be Mechal this Shabbos in order to allow him to be Shomer Shabbos? When it comes to a situation of real Pikuach Nefesh, then we're concerned the person is going to die. He's never going to be Shomer Shabbos again. But here, that's not really the concern. So he doesn't accept it. He doesn't like this Chelkes Yalov in general, as we see from other references. But if I recall correctly, in the Chelkes Yalov in the Tshuva, he does say that there's reason to understand that the logic of Chalel Alav Shabbos Achas is true even only regarding this Shabbos. So therefore, if that's all we have in front of us, just the Shabbos, he could do mitzvos. So then that's enough justification. So that was his question. It's an interesting discussion in general, what you do with that logic outside the standard rubric of pikuach nefesh, the idea of just taking the logic by itself and say, we'll sacrifice this Shabbos to some degree in the interest of future Shabboses when it applies. So that's a lot of pilpul to discuss. Yes, Shlomo.
And you could also say that this ties into the level of suffix discussion that we've had, maybe discussed in the past, I don't know. But when we're discussing, for example, in this case, if the ger were not to convert on Shabbat, there is a level of suffix that he won't make it to the next Shabbat. But I guess the Mincha Asher is saying is that that is so low that we don't consider that, whereas the Chalka Yoav says we do consider that as a level of suffix.
I mean, that's relevant too. It's not what they're actually saying, but I mean, it's relevant too. You could also put that into the discussion. So if he doesn't make it, meaning he's not going to survive the next Shabbos, perhaps? So,
I
mean, is the question that maybe he won't survive to the next Shabbos, so then we have to chop a rein? It's not clear that we have that as a way of thinking. I mean, in the actual Pikuach Nefesh, we have it that even if we know that the person's only going to survive for the Shabbat, let's say we want to save the Mechal Shabbat to save somebody's life, and it's a Chai Yishah situation. So we know that even if we do whatever we're going to do, he's still not going to make it another 7 days, so he's not going to keep another Shabbat afterwards. So that is true. That everyone agrees that we'll still do it anyway. So we would be Mechal Shabbat only for the Shabbat. But to say, therefore, that, okay, we should do it specifically for the purpose of this Shabbos at the risk of a Yisra Drabbanan, that's a little bit more of a Chiddush, and that's where there's a debate about this. But nonetheless, there's also still a question whether B'dievet this is an issue or not, and here you look at the Nos Dekeim on the Shulchan Aruch, it's left somewhat obscure. So it's interesting how this still remains a somewhat undefined topic, despite its origins in the Gemara and all of the possible surrounding issues. But ultimately, it's not a matter of great practicality, because we're dealing with unusual situations. B'chachila, we certainly are not going to be tovel somebody l'shem geirus on Shabbos. And then, after the process is finished, so then the ger comes out. Now call him ger for sure. So now he is fully converted, and he recites the bracha. It's a machlokas what the bracha is, whether it should be al hatvila or al tvilas gerim. So most prefer the text of al hatvila. The same for tvila in general. At least if we're talking about the ger himself. If we're talking about ger katan, where the bezdin is taking care of everything, that may be different, and that's something that we'll talk about separately. It's got its whole literature connected to it. It's a whole other subject. But an adult ger will make the bracha himself after this process of the tefillah. And this was also one of the major sources that we talked about that first week, that the whole concept is interesting because the Gemara in Psachim on Daf Zayin, a little bit of a preview of next year's Masechta. So the Gemara in Psachim on Daf Zayin says that in general, Birchas HaMitzvot have to be made before the mitzvah is performed, over Lasi Asan, with some exception, including Tzvila, because Gavra lo chazi, because the individual is not fit to make a bracha until after the tefillah, so therefore the brechas hamitzvah has to wait until then. And Tosus understands over there that that's talking about tzilas ger, that he's not Jewish until he finishes the process, so therefore it's not shaykh for him to make the bracha until afterwards. And that prompted the question that many talked about to Yosef Engel and many others, that there's a bigger issue here. Why is he chayiv in the first place? What mitzvah is he performing? So he was obligated to be tovel to convert when he wasn't Jewish, and the only issue was that he couldn't make the bracha then for technical reasons. But how was he bar chiyuva in the first place? So that was one of the major sources that was invoked in the whole discussion to suggest that there actually is a mitzvah on the ger to convert, and that that's why we find the Lashon ger habal hisgayer. We don't say goy habal hisgayer, we don't say a non-Jew who comes to convert, we say a ger. And as Yosef Engel and many others commented, that essentially we assume that when you have a ger tzedek, that their Judaism was in there the whole time, and they had an obligation to follow it through, to go through the process in order to actualize their Jewish neshama that was always there. And retroactively, we see that, yes, they were chayiv in mitzvahs. They're obligated to do that. And the bracha that's being recited here is the reflection of that obligation. So it's a fascinating perspective that all emerges from this din. So basically, that's a general overview of the process and the symbolism of Tevila in the Geirus process. There are a few other details to talk about, including where exactly Beis Din fits. So we'll also have to come back to that in the context of understanding Beis Din. But that also becomes a particularly challenging issue in terms of women. So when women convert, so how exactly the Beis Din addresses that, the topic of some contemporary controversy. So that's something that we will have to fill in also, probably tomorrow. So we'll pick up with those additional issues tomorrow. And that's a general overview of what's involved here. So just to quickly recap what we spoke about, we talked about what is the pasuk that tells us that tefillah was historically part of the process. And the Rambam picks a pasuk that the Gemara sounds like it's rejecting, and the Bach figures out how to deal with that. We noted there's another pasuk in Parshas Bereishis that's relevant, and in favor of Bereishis and Parshas Vayishlach that's relevant. But there's probably two elements here. We have to figure out conceptually what tefillah does to transition from idolatry to Judaism. But we also need a pasuk specifically from the context of Kol Yisrael's Geirus in order to establish that that is a part of the Geirus process. We talked about the fact that the Gemara says it has to be a kosher mikvah, has to be a tevilah without any chatzitzos, and that at that point the mitzvos are reminded to, or he's reminded of the mitzvos at this time. Rashi emphasizes because it's now the time that he's entering into the bris, Levush says, in order to be mezariz him. And we talked about the issue of kavana. It certainly makes sense, though. Certainly l'chatchila to assume that kavana is a big role here. But the question is how to interpret the Gemara at the beginning of this again, Mehem Mebeis of Milo Tavlu Nidutso, which sounds like it could mean that a tefillah for the purposes of Nida could also count for the purposes of Geirus. So it was Machlok to show him how to interpret that Gemara. The Rambam and others understand it just as saying that if we see this woman follows Halacha like Tefillah for Nida, it shows that her initial Geirus was sincere. But Rashi also quotes a view that no, that the Tefillah itself for the purposes of Nida could count. And Tosfos brings up the various technical problems. How are you going to have the Beis Din in there? This isn't happening at night. So Tosfos has various ways of addressing that. Maybe the Beis Din is only for the Kabbalah and Mitzvos. Maybe the nighttime issue is only L'chachila, it's not Ma'akev. There are various approaches in the Rishonim as far as that's concerned, but it affects the whole issue of Kavana. And we got into the issue of Shabbos, that the Gemara says that if, according to Zerilsky's opinion, that you need tefillah to complete the process, so therefore it's a problem for Shabbos. It's a problem of tikkun, of the Kanisha Drabban. The Nosekelim and the Shulchan Aruch itself and the Rambam will emphasize the Beis Din part, which throws a little confusion. Is it an issue of din on Shabbos, or is it an issue of tikkun, or is it both? That because you have the Beis Din there, that's what makes it undeniably a tikkun. Otherwise, you could say it looks like the person is just cooling off. And it brings up the issue of, first of all, when does this happen? Does it happen when it gets out of the mikveh? Does it happen in the mikveh itself? And who is the Isser on? Is the Isser on Beis Din? Is the Isser on the Ger himself? Rav Asher has a whole truth about that, where he gets into the whole question of Ba'im Ke'acha, do we say he becomes Jewish at the same time that he's now relevant to this Issa D'Rabbanan of doing this on Shabbos because at that moment he became Jewish? That was the whole discussion. We got into the Chalkes Yod's question of why don't we say it should be Mutter to do on Shabbos because Chalel of Shabbos Achas. And then we ended just talking about the bracha that's recited afterwards, about what the text of the bracha is, and the idea that the bracha is itself a big chiddush, as many Achronim discuss, because the Gemara says he should do it afterwards because he's not able to make a bracha before. So fine, he's not able, but why is he a bar chiyuv in the first place? So that seems to imply something very fascinating about the retroactive lesson here, that we see that this individual who is the Ger Tzedek, that the neshama was always there, that we now, l'mafreya, we retroactively see that this is a Jewish soul that was obligated to express itself through conversion. And once that has happened, so then the bracha is appropriate. Okay, so we will stop here. Moshe, you have a question? Moshe Blank?
Just in terms of the bracha part,
yeah.
I was reading in the Nisim Karelis Gera Sefer that the bracha of Shechianu, that the Rav says that you say Shechianu, but he's like a lot of modern folks can say Natsu.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about
that. Yeah, but I actually am curious about the Nisim Karelis because I don't have that Sefer. I have almost all of his farm, and I assumed he would have one on Gera's, but I don't have that, so where is it? Is it online anywhere?
I mean, I just bought it.
Okay, I actually have half a shelf full of his farm, and you know, he was very involved in Geirus, so I'd love to see that safer. Could I trouble you to scan that page, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow? Can you email it? How big a safer is it?
Very small. I think it just came out, like, a couple months ago.
Okay, I wonder if there's some record order from it. I actually very much was wondering if such a safer existed, because he was very involved in Geirus, and I have his farm on many other things, but not on that. It came out after he passed away. He was passed away a few months ago.
Yeah, it was posthumous.
Okay, so I'd love to see the safer in general, but if you wouldn't mind, maybe just that page that you're referring to, if you could email it, well, then we could add in that discussion tomorrow. Okay, sound like a plan? All right, so I wish you all a meaningful Rosh Chodesh Av. We still have 9 days to turn things around. Let's hope we're successful. But one way or another, we'll hopefully get all of the messages that this Kufa is meant to bring to us. Okay, we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you.